Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. What is a fruit? A fruit is the best. He is constantly training and conditioning himself to meet and overcome all obstacles in his path. His sole purpose is to help to deliver the 17 million or more dead to the Lamb of God, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the honorable minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad. To do this, he is compelled to be obedient, tolerant, militant, courteous, humble, honest, dependable. A fruit is obedience to the laws of Islam and those in authority. His conduct is militant. He is humble and submissive. He is tolerant and understanding. He is courteous and respectful. He is honest in thoughts, deeds, and actions. He is alert and dependable.
If this is frightening, God is willing to take up the fight for us. But if it is forced on us, we too have to fight. We cannot afford to lose another generation. Since the 60s, we've lost two. And we should say, like the members of the Jewish community, after the Holocaust, never again. I think we should let the world know that we're tired. We're not going to go out and do something stupid.
Go ahead.
I didn't give the order yet.
That's right.
A person who is being attacked has the right to use that degree of force consonant with the force that is coming against him or her to repel that force. If it is deadly force, we are allowed to respond with deadly force. This is not man talking, this is what God has said. So if you break into someone's house, you are allowed to literally kill the person that breaks into your home. That is a right, even the responsibility of every citizen. But the real question that has to be asked is, are we citizens?
Yeah.
Are these constitutional guarantees there for you and me? Or the black or Hispanic or Native American or even poor white people?
Go ahead.
We have come to the position now to question this government. Let's stop a minute. Don't give them no more service until they answer the question. Don't ask me to fight in a war. I'm asking you now. Are we citizens? And if we are, why the hell do we have to fight for the right to vote when no white person has to do that? So, if I'm not a citizen, then don't lie to me and make me think that I have these constitutional guarantees when, in fact, I don't have them at all. You put a little trick in your 13th Amendment. You gave us citizenship, and then you said, however, if we're convicted of a crime.
That's what it said.
And now you're making it easy to convict black people with crime, to rob them of whatever guarantee. You are trickily, deceitful. rightfully, demonically, said you gave us.
You are out on the front line with the fruit of Islam. I am your host, Jihad Muhammad of Atlanta, Georgia. Tonight, in the first hour, our topic, America's Black Indigenous Under Siege. After Farrakhan Speaks Roundtable Talks with Chief Magistrate Court Justice Maurice Muhammad, Student Regional Prison Reform Minister Victor Muhammad, and the People's Attorney, Brother Kenneth Muhammad, they are here to discuss the Stand Your Ground Law, the 13th Amendment, the Trayvon murder, and the lockdown of the black and brown inside of America. In the second hour, we bring to you the West Side Connection of some of the student ministers of the West Coast under the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. At the Farrakhan Speaks Roundtable Talks in the second hour with Student Minister Keith Mohammed of Oakland, California. Student Minister Robert Muhammad of Compton, California. Student Minister Hugh Muhammad of San Diego, California. They are here to discuss the divine message, the time, and what must be done, part 28. Also, boots on the ground, we will salute some of the cities that you rarely hear about, some of the smaller cities that the soldiers of the Fruit of Islam go into with the final call. So sit back, buckle up, let's ride. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his servant. Ramadan Mubarak, and I salam alaikum. And greetings to all those that are with us tonight. Tonight, we're going to deal in the first hour with some issues concerning the law and the verdict of the Trayvon Martin murder case. But look, first of all, let me see who's on the line with us so far. Is our brother, Chief Magistrate Court Justice, Brother Maurice Muhammad, on the line?
I am, sir.
All right, salam alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam and Ramadan Mubarak.
Ramadan Kareem, sir. Is our brother, Student Prison Reform Minister, Brother Victor Muhammad, on the line?
All right, salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. How are you tonight, beloved?
I am well by Allah's grace and infinite mercy. Thank you, beloved.
Brother, it's good to have you on tonight, sir. Is the People's Attorney on? Brother Kenneth Muhammad. Brother Kenneth didn't get in. Brother Rafi, he should be trying to check in any moment. Well, let's get started. Let me talk to you first, Brother Victor, real quick. Give me your thoughts on the Trayvon murder case and its verdict.
Well, dear brother, once again, I want to thank you for allowing me to be on. The one thing is, every generation has had a Trayvon Martin. I remember Yusuf Hawkins, Eleanor Bumpus. We've always had these vigilantes, Diao. We've had vigilantes to kill us because there's never been a value of black life. And it was definitely not a surprise, and nor did I think that justice will be served. It's interesting how this type of verdict is becoming so predictable. We've had our own Trayvon Martins here in Detroit. We had the police I don't know if you've heard about the police that was filming the first 48 when they came in and they killed an 8-year-old baby girl. He had a hung jury just before, 2 weeks before, the verdict was brought down. I just believe that it's one of those situations that is becoming so predictable because it's so egregious, because this world's time is up. And I believe firmly that the messenger of Allah is 100% correct when he said that there will be a time where they won't even try to hide their fangs. And that's what's happening. This justice system, they wanted to overhaul it with the OJ case and change the whole way juries are selected and everything like that. But they've let time and time again murderers of our babies, our men, our women, go right in our face and still ask us to sit and swallow this down and say in the next breath that we're all American.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Brother, Chief Magistrate Court Justice, what say you, sir?
Brother, you know, assalamu alaikum, brother, and to all the listeners, and especially to my dear brother, Brother Victor. It's so good to hear your voice. We see each other
good to hear yours,
all the time.
Yes, sir.
Dear brothers and sisters, you know, I think that the verdict was, as Brother Victor said, very predictable. But I think the verdict also has set a mold in the country that we have to go into self-reflection, because Brother Victor mentioned the word vigilante. How many Trayvon Martin cases are there that the perpetrator just happened to be black?
That's right.
On violence on another 17-year-old black male. And we're not in the streets. Brother said that we have to value and put a steeper value on our lives. My grandmother used to tell me, she said, Maurice, you dictate how people treat you. The way that you treat yourself is how people will treat you. When we are not outraged when young black men are killing young black men, and become outraged when white men kill black men, and we look at it as a systematic flaw, it is a systematic flaw, but they're simply moving from what we are giving them. See, when we say no, if there's a murder in our city and we bring that young man to justice and bring him safely to justice and make sure that his rights are not being violated and nobody violates our brother, then in our community, the life value and appreciation will rise. So when in our community, when it rises, it's going to rise in the eyes of others. See, when they see just a thug young man in a hoodie, that's the predicate of them being able to say or being able to do what they please, and there's no outcry. But now we have to begin to cry out in our communities and organize and mobilize our community not to kill itself. And then we can say to Mr. Zimmerman, you have to deal with our community. But they're saying there are so many cold cases in Miami and other parts of Florida until by the time you get to Zimmerman, you have forgotten about Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay. Is the attorney, Brother Kenneth Muhammad, on the line?
Assalamu alaikum. Yes, sir, I'm on. Can you hear me now?
Well, alaikum salam, soldier. We can hear you loud and clear. Brother Kenneth, let me ask you a question here. A stand your ground law is a type of self-defense law that gives individuals the right to use reasonable force to defend themselves without any requirement to evade or retreat from a dangerous situation. Now, when Zimmerman first went in and talked to the police, he was using the stand your ground defense, but he backed away from it. Is it because the reasonable force to defend himself was out of the question at this point, or what? What do you say?
Well, my understanding is there are different points within the trial process in which you can invoke the law. It is, in one sense, what you would call an affirmative defense, where you can, before the trial even begins, you can have a hearing where evidence is presented, and if you're able to demonstrate at that hearing that it was a situation in which you were defending yourself, that you were under attack, they would not even allow the case to go to trial. Mm-hmm. And when this all started, you'll remember when Zimmerman was not originally arrested, the police officers said that they were not arresting him because of that law, that they were basically prohibited from allowing or forcing Mr. Zimmerman to face prosecution because of the law. So after the outcry around the country and they finally decided that they were going to move forward with charges, everyone assumed that Zimmerman's attorneys were going to have a hearing, they were going to bring in evidence and try to show that there should not even be a trial to begin with. Once it got to the point where they actually had to have that hearing, they backed away and they didn't have it. There were a lot of people, pundits on TV, giving different views as to why they believe that is. One fact is he would have had to take in the witness stand during the hearing and actually given his version of events. And number two, I think they understood that they would have lost the hearing. So just my thought on it, I believe that they didn't want to put him on the witness stand for a hearing that they knew that they were going to lose. But the law actually did impact the case because at another point, well, they first of all, after the state presented their evidence, the defense could have basically asked for a directed verdict on the grounds, on the stand your ground law basis, basically saying we should not even have to put forward a defense given the case that the prosecution put on under the stand your ground law. Mr. Zimmerman is automatically should automatically be freed, but he didn't win under the original motion or after the state closed their evidence on stand your ground. But what did happen is when they sent the jury out into the jury deliberation room to go over the evidence, they sent instructions with the jury. And inside of the instructions was the stand your ground law. Now, to my understanding, there's only one juror that has been interviewed, and that juror repeatedly stated that she felt that she had to give the verdict that she gave, and she quoted or referenced the stand your ground law during her interview as a basis for the verdict. So the stand your ground law, even though people keep saying it did not impact this trial because they did not have the motions hearing in the beginning of the process, it actually did because the law was included in the jury's instructions. And the one juror that has given an interview stated that they used that law and felt that it actually restricted their, you know, them in terms of the outcome of the case.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Brother Maurice, let me ask you a question. Can you for the listening audience, could you tell them the history of this law, Stand Your Ground, and is it going to be, and also how are laws implemented through legislation?
Well, the history of Stand Your Ground, I remember we covered this on a previous show.
Right.
The history of Stand Your Ground is a common law or ruling that comes from the old English castle law, where you have the term where a man's home is his castle. A person has the ability to defend their abode, their home, their domicile, where they abide and where they live. Back in the olden days when people would come and squat property, there would be fisticuffs over property barriers. So if a man's castle or a man's home is his area, then at that point he has the right to defend that particular property. It extended also a little later into family members and the household members. So if a crime is being committed against your household member or against yourself, then you have the right to defend by law and by common law and by just instinctive law, human law, if you would, you have the right to defend your family and defend your family's property. So so the Stand Your Ground Law really is a very, very old doctrine, but has, you know, just recently been brought up, you know, a long time, and sometimes the language changes. We say stand your ground now. In the 70s and 80s, you talked about self-defense. You know, you have the right to self-defense. And then in the 90s and 2000s, you start talking about justifiable homicide, you know, different things that would come about to protect the right or to protect a person's right to defend themselves. So it stems back to common law practices of the castle rules. We have to really understand that particular point, that this is nothing new.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, is it going to be hard to get this thing overturned? Because legislation has to basically, how does this thing work? People vote on this, or what? The Senate and the Congress, they vote on implementing laws, or how does this thing work?
Yes. Now, I just wanted to elaborate on what Brother Murray said. It's in 38 of the 50 states. It's not a thing that's just confined to Florida. We have standard ground here in Michigan.
Absolutely.
So it's in 38 of the 50 states, and I also wanted to elaborate on where it came from as well. The historical condemnation of it is that it was implemented also after the slave revolts led by Nat Turner. Because that way it was their way of saying, okay, the slaves came towards us. It kind of disabled their sanctity when the slave revolts happened, that, okay, if these slaves come up here, we can kill them and not be charged.
Right.
And that was part of where it came from as well. The thing about this Stand Your Ground, I had some statistical data that said when a white person killed a black man in Stand Your Ground, 364% of the time they're acquitted.
Right.
You know, and you're looking at you're just looking at the further systemic racism that's in the judicial system as it pertains to a black life being taken.
Right.
This thing is happening over and over, and like I said, it's not getting a lot of outcry. You still have the case down in Florida with Jordan Davis, where the man told him to turn the music down, and he shot into the car and killed them.
Right.
But these cases are more white versus black. Now, my question would have been, I would have loved to have known, if Mr. Zimmerman felt so threatened, if he didn't have a gun in his waist, would he have got out of that car and done his neighborhood watch so eloquently if he didn't have a gun in his waistband?
That's a good
point.
He
just got more than what he bargained for. But didn't Trayvon have a right to stand his ground? Because he was
obviously
threatened.
Absolutely. But that's another point, Brother Victor, because I'm coming to something with that you're raising right there. But I want to go back to my initial question with the judge, because this is like 33 states that have Stand Your Ground. I'm seeing a lot of protests about trying to change that law. Is this going to be an impossible thing? Because you're talking about changing it in all these different states. What is the math that is used in legislation that you can get something like this done?
Well,
or is it a waste of time?
Well, of course it would have to be introduced in its formal course. Just this afternoon, Alabama has had an amendment introduced to Stand Your Ground in reference to, and they're calling it the Trayvon Martin Act, when a person actually retreats and then comes back, kind of like what Mr. Zimmerman did by being instructed to stay in the car. And once you disobey a lawful command of emergency or law enforcement, then you're really at your own risk. In the state of Alabama, and it brings into light, in the state of Alabama, one of the tenets for staying your ground, brother. It says, if he is a peace officer or a private person lawfully assisting a peace officer at his direction. So if a person is just a Joe Blow person and a police officer says, pick up this gun and shoot these people, then by law, with the self-defense situation, that police officer can give a private citizen the command and the authority to take another person's life based on the self-defense. And basically we're deputizing now. And so it goes back to some of that practice back in the cowboy days where you had posses and they would give them the little tin badge to put on. We're getting back to that particular point now. And this So there will be aspects of the law changed and amended, not necessarily the doctrine, because the doctrine really is older than the Constitution. Mm. So it's going to be very difficult to change the law in its entirety, but there are certain aspects and certain points and bullet points that you're going to have to change because of the time necessity of change.
Now let's get to the meat of the conversation. Brother Kenneth, let me come to you here. Because we're building this thing up here. The 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution abolished slavery and involuntary servitude except as a punishment for a crime. How does stand your ground apply to a black man who is a felon? And George Zimmerman approaches a brother who has a felony conviction and he falls under the 13th Amendment. How does the stand your ground apply for him?
Well, let me back up and I'll come at it this way. This case, first of all, I think is similar to the O.J. Simpson trial in the sense that, if you recall, that the verdict came down not long before the Million Man March. It was right around the time of the Million Man March, and there was a lot that happened in the country that basically took feelings and positions that people had, both black and white, and solidified them, and it showed differences in opinions among the people. This case is similar because the facts of the case, I think, in order to acquit Mr. Zimmerman, in order for all of those that think that he was an innocent person to believe that, there's a series of assumptions that a person has to make in order to do that. Now, and I'm coming at the answer to your question, but in my view, the prosecution failed, and most of the people I hear this case, I believe, are not looking at what actually happened. If you look at the version of events that the defense gave, they're basically making it, giving the analysis that this man saw a person that he thought was a burglar actively engaged in a burglary. He told the police that he has something in his hand, so he believes he has a deadly weapon. He chases him a significant distance, goes after him, and then comes within arm's length of this person that he believes is a burglar with a deadly weapon. But everyone, both sides, the prosecution and the defense, presented that moment in time where he got arm's length away from him as a moment where the firearm that he had on him was packed away in his holster and not viewable. And at the same time that Trayvon had a man come up to him that didn't do anything threatening, but yet he punched him in the nose and then jumped on top of him. Both of those things require assumptions. An assumption about Trayvon that he, without provocation, could be the kind of a person to just haul off and smack somebody and then jump on top of them after they fall down. And that Zimmerman could be some kind of Superman where he can think that someone is an armed felon burglar, and he comes within arm's length in the dead of night without showing his firearm. What I believe actually happened, and again, I'm leading up to the answer to your question, but what actually happened is that he said to the police, they always get away. He didn't want them to get away. So he went up to him and showed his firearm. And he thought that he was going to get him to stay. Basically, you stay put. Like, I called the police, you stay here. He showed his firearm, and that's when Trayvon went to defend himself. Now, there is if you go up to someone like that and you're threatening them with a firearm, that's an aggravated assault. And if you commit an aggravated assault and then a death results, it doesn't matter whether Trayvon hit him first. It doesn't matter which one of them was on top. It doesn't matter which one of them was on that tape yelling for help. All of that evidence was irrelevant if they would have said what had to have happened, that if he's coming up to this person that is in this dangerous position, he had to have shown that firearm, and that's why he felt that he could get that close. Now, black people assumed the obvious here, that this man coming up to him made a threatening move, and that Trayvon, being the 17-year-old child, was victimized. But the white community made an opposite assumption, and the assumptions that people are making are based upon what they bring to the table, what their life experiences are, what they've gone through. So if jury that's going to judge a person is judging each one of two sides based upon assumptions about the person, you're asking about a brother that's a convicted felon. He's involved in a situation like this. People with history, people who come from bad neighborhoods, people whose life experiences isn't so polished. If they are in a trial, their life is presented. Everything about them is presented. The jury is going to make assumptions about each one of the sides. And the assumptions that they make and the baggage that they bring from their life experiences are going to be such that the things that you have to deduce and put together in your head that will not be easily seen in the evidence, but you have to look at circumstantial evidence and reach conclusions based upon circumstantial evidence, they will not see that kind of evidence in a light favorable to brothers with the history, like you're saying.
Okay, so you're actually saying politics comes into play.
Exactly.
Okay, all right. Brother Victor?
Yes, sir.
I know the work that you do, you must see things like this all the time. What say you to this, brother? If a brother's coming out of prison all the time, and unfortunately the 13th Amendment, you know, it really puts a big restriction on us.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Do you see this all the time in the prison systems, brothers going back and forth in there because they're being railroaded because of that 13th Amendment and not having the right to defend themselves in the streets in a case like this? Or what say you?
Most definitely, dear brother. One thing's for certain is the reason why most of our brothers and sisters end up incarcerated in the beginning is because they cannot afford proper representation. And you get a lot of court-appointed attorneys, and I've seen it with my own eyes, and their number one job is to get you to plea bargain. So you end up incarcerated based on the plea bargain, not on guilt or innocent, because there's also enhancement of sentencing, which says that if you take this case to trial, you're going to get more time if you go to trial and lose than it would if you take the plea bargain or whatever deal the prosecution presents itself to. And you mentioned saying it's politics. The reason why over 30-something states have stand your ground is because the NRA's lobbying policy for gun usage. They spend millions of dollars to get their lobbyists in positions of authority in a legislative environment to get laws that are favorable to their constituents passed. That's how Stand Your Ground became such, and like brother had said, it evolved from self-defense, castle law, and now Stand Your Ground. So those things have evolved because when it become the negative connotation was associated with it, they spend their dollars to get it into a positive format to them. And actually, we all know that the at the base of all of this type of legislation is straight racism. Because it's not us, because if Trayvon Martin had pulled a gun on George Zimmerman and shot George Zimmerman, there wouldn't have been a 28-day lag in the time of the actual shooting and death and him being arrested. It would have happened immediately. So when you have those type of situations coming, they're straight parallel to racism. They're designed for the fear of the black male by the white male, and the white, and that's why they put the jury that they put together. They had the person that they paid the highest juror consultant in the nation to analyze and pick this jury. And that's why you haven't had a situation where you've had majority woman jury and then the minority. They didn't say she was black. They said she was Hispanic. They said she was a minority. And there's this fear factor that they knew existed that they could help get the, oh, yeah, that black guy was there to do wrong. The black guy was there to do this. There's people, like Minister Avery so beautifully said this weekend, he said, why was he out so late? What was he doing? See, they make it an assumption that he had to be doing wrong. Then the other thing is this. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that before the actual physical assassination, you got to have the character assassination. So they went back in Trayvon's history. He smoked marijuana. He did this. He was a bad kid. He was suspended. He cheated on a third-grade spelling test. All this crap that they throw in there to get public opinion swayed in the fact that when we let this guy go, the public will not be upset because we've already demonized him in their eyes, so that when we pull off the rest of this modern-day lynching, that there will not be an outcry about it. And they also know this about black people. We're going to be mad for a minute, and then eventually we will fall back in line again. We've got to get to the point, like Brother said earlier, when we get outraged when Pee-wee, Lil Nuck, Red kills one of our brothers and sisters in our community, as well as when a Zimmerman does. But the one thing Zimmerman must know for certain is acquittal in this world is conviction in the world of Allah, and you do have your day of acquittal that you're going to have to answer to, Mr. Zimmerman.
That's right. Well, let me ask the judge this. Brother Maurice, this 13th Amendment, brother, see, I'm coming to something here. On one hand, it seems like stand your ground is a white law. Okay. Even if it's not, it looks that way. Now you got the 13th Amendment tied to the black man in America. If he gets a felony conviction, he basically loses his rights as a citizen. Is that right?
That's right.
Well, he loses certain civil liberties.
Okay. Let me ask you this before you go any further. If I'm not a felon, but I have a person in my home is a felon, do I have the right to bear arms in my home and stand your ground with a weapon in my home if somebody invades my home, if I have a felon living in my home?
Now, I would say this, Brother Jahar, in fairness of law.
Okay.
Most of those caveats are based on your state jurisdictions.
Yeah. Okay.
So a state may say, Alabama may say, yes, you can have a person in your home. Georgia may say, no, sir, or you can't be in an environment. There are certain guidelines per state that will give you that overall law. But the general law is if a person is a felon, then they lose their right to carry a firearm. In Alabama, they have a variation. If you are convicted of a violent crime, say, for instance, you have been convicted of armed robbery, you don't need a gun. If you have been convicted of assault in the first degree, we don't have aggravated assault. We have assault in the first and second. So in those particular points, if you are a violent criminal, if you are a rapist that has been paroled, then the likelihood of you possessing a gun is going to be slim to none. But as far as a person who commits, let's say, a quote-unquote white-collar crime, if you got bad checks or if you are a credit card thief or just mild and petty type things like that, they are more apt to give you the right. And you have to jump through some hoops now. It's not just a hand me a sucker type deal. You have to go through a probationary period. You have to go through this, and then you have to petition the governor's office for your right to carry a firearm as well as to be reinstated as a voter. So there are certain rights that you do have, but I understand your point. It can be. Now, what I don't want us to do is relegate the 13th Amendment to black folk, because what happens with that, people that are convicted of felonies, and most times, if they are not, if a lot of times they are not necessarily innocent, but not necessarily guilty. A lot of times they are victims of being in the wrong place at the right time. So
okay.
We have to really boil down and really begin to teach and train our young people, because we see that they're in a very precarious situation. See, when you're talking about a jury pool and you're talking about selecting your jurors, the opinion of the jurors are going to be derived from by even the public persona. See, when your jury pool is looking at Atlanta Housewives and they're looking at my 10 baby mamas, see, now they're saying that all black people are like this. You know, I remember there was a celebrity that went over to Japan, and the Japanese people were not accustomed to seeing a lot of black people. And when the celebrity got off the plane, they was like, "What's up, my nigga? You know, so it was like, okay, is this what you think of us? Because this is what we put out there.
Okay.
So we have to be very careful on the image that we put out there, too.
Okay, but Brother Maurice, this 13th Amendment, it says the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution abolished slavery,
mm-hmm.
and involuntary servitude except as punishment for a crime. That sounds
right.
Like that's talking about the sons and daughters of slaves.
Okay. Well, I mean, I can hear that. I can hear that in the language.
My point is, can they play? And we just got finished talking about justice and politics. So if
right.
I'm in a southern state, can they play the politics and apply this to me to justify taking away my rights as a citizen of the United States, or what? It seems like there's a gray area here.
Well, it is slightly a gray area, Brother Jihad. But what they do is they put a trigger in there, and basically the caveat is, You can retain your rights if, in fact, you don't break the law. And once you have broken the law, then we have the right to take those rights away from you. Not just
because can I chime in on here on this?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Yes, sir. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the point that you're making with regard to the 13th Amendment that if any of us become a felon, this constitutional guarantee that we cannot be basically made into slaves or forced into involuntary servitude, it goes away, that laws such as the Stand Your Ground law are designed to basically herd us back into the jail system, get a record on us, and put us in a position to be back into involuntary servitude. Is that the overall point that you're making with it?
That's one of the points I'm showing here is that the Stand Your Ground seems like it's so far it's just applying for white folks. But now if you take a brother who's got a felony conviction, I mean, how does Stand Your Ground apply for him? It seems like he's put in a position where his back is against the wall, where he got to walk with his head down when he walked by white folks. I mean, that's the way it looks to me.
Oh, I see what you're saying. It's
okay.
Like if I can't make another move.
I got two strikes now.
I see
right.
what you're saying. Okay, yeah, and that is a valid point. I mean, because going back to the assumptions that have to be made with regard to the Trayvon Martin case, to tie it to your point, is that the people that acquitted him are assuming that Zimmerman brought himself within arm's length of a person that he thought was a potentially armed burglar in the dead of night, and all he wanted to do was just talk to him without doing anything violent, showing his weapon or anything. And that same jury assumed
that there is something so wrong with the mind of Trayvon Martin that he could have a man come up to him talking to him innocently, and not only does he punch the man down, but then he jumps on top of him and starts beating him into the ground. Now, that jury believed that about him.
Right.
So if we are the kind of a people where a jury can believe those two impossible things simultaneously,
right,
that there's something so bad about us that we can be on the phone talking and have candy and tea in our hand and we're walking home to see the game and all of a sudden decide to just punch down an innocent person and jump on top of him, if they can believe that about us, then I see your point that if in the house and say, well, wait a second, I can't even try to defend myself in this situation, and it puts us in a certain box. And I would agree that box is there because all the assumptions that a likely jury pool is going to make, we know what the assumptions are because there are people all throughout this country saying they would have acquitted Zimmerman, which means they would have made those two assumptions that I just stated.
Okay.
You're right. And you know, Brother Jihad, just to touch on what Brother Kenneth just said, you would also have to believe in that point that all black men have at least, what would you say, Brother Kenneth, at least seven arms?
At least what was that?
I said we would all have to have at least seven arms to actually do what Mr. Zimmerman said, because he said he was on the phone. Then he punched him. Then he had his hand inside of his jacket on the can. Then he put his hand over his mouth. And then he grabbed a gun. So at least black men have at least, what, five other hands that people can't see. You know, you know, so we have to look at the perception. And I think we got caught on this Zimmerman case. You have to take your hat off to the defense because they did a splendid job in manipulating the prosecution to even go along, because as we began the jury selection process, and Brother Kenneth can kind of bear witness to this, the prosecution has a take and has a say into what jurors are struck and what jurors are not struck.
Well, okay.
You have a general pool, but then you have also have an opportunity to go in there and pick out who you want to strike and who you want to keep.
Okay. And, brothers, we just don't have enough time to deal with all of this right this moment because we're getting ready to head straight into the second hour. But I want to talk to the Brother Victor for a moment, sir. Brother Victor, brothers that are incarcerated, when they're in prison, do they fall under civil rights or – that's one question. Do they fall under civil rights laws when they're incarcerated? And when they come out, do we have something set up, the Nation of Islam, that helps our brothers when they come out and our sisters when they come out into the streets to help themselves get out of this bag of the felony conviction?
Well, of course, the Nation of Islam has always been at the forefront of prison reform ministry, even when it wasn't quote unquote popular or chic to do so. The thing is this: everyone jumped on the bag in the prison reform ministry, most of the churches and different organizations, when the federal government was giving a lot of money out for such programs, and as a result of that, the money has since dried up. And people have moved on. The Nation of Islam has not received federal dollars, state dollars, or even local dollars in many cases in terms of doing the ministry that was started by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad when he was incarcerated in Milan, Michigan in the 1940s. And that's where the prison reform ministry really began. But the thing is this, the one thing, and I was speaking to a brother earlier today, another regional minister, and we were speaking on this, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, "I am messenger of Allah to you all."
Right.
Now, saying that, there's over 2.5 million people in prison in the States, of which over 1.7 million are black. And the thing is, if we're going to be the prison ministry to them all, we need a lot more prison ministers. So we have to be more active in prison reform ministry, I also liken it to, I call it the invisible ministry. You really don't see the results until our brothers get released and our sisters get released and they show up at the mosque. We are the only soft landing spot in the community because most churches and most organizations don't want convicted felons. But because of the redemptive quality of the life-giving teachers, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we're the ones who say, come as you are, you just can't stay that way. And we have proven time and time again that we are the answer. But the fact of the matter is this, you heard this when the minister in the time What Must Be Done was speaking about Peter King. He said, you had no love for the black man and woman when we brought peace to them. So you're afraid that by chance the Nation of Islam or Farrakhan is going to get a government dollar or tax dollar, and you're more concerned about that than you are about us bringing peace and serenity to our community like we did in the Mayfair Projects with the Dope Busters.
Right.
So the thing is this, our brothers and sisters, like Brother Maurice said, they got to walk on eggshells when they get out because they can't pick up that third strike, that fourth strike, or whatever the new legislation is to incarcerate us for 25 to life. We just incorporated a four-time habitual here in the state of Michigan, whereas most cases the habitual crime is you have to have the same crime, gun, gun, gun. But in Michigan, we passed the law here, four-time habitual is four felonies, period. It could be child support. It could be drunk driving. It could be speeding or anything. But once you get your fourth habitual, it's 25 to life guaranteed mandatory sentence, and you have no influence on it. So the thing is this, our brothers and sisters, it's slanted definitely against them for when they come out. And the thing is it's beautiful that Brother Kenneth and Brother Maurice, they're such knowledgeable brothers on the law. And that's what needs to be said. We in the nation have to educate not only the brothers and sisters returning, but we who are inside the nation who could come victim to this law. I know for a fact that I couldn't stand my ground and shoot anybody who came on my property because we would be on a different plane than Mr. Zimmerman was. Here in Michigan, we have an open carry law, and you go into certain parts of the communities where they live, and you walk around, they walk around the store with their gun out on their holster. If I am driving, and our brothers, Brother Maurice, Brother Kenneth, who are esteemed lawyers and magistrates, if they were pulled over by the police and they look down and said, what's the first thing they're going to say is, gun, partner, and then the shootout's going to take place. Mm-hmm. We had a situation that was covered by Fire McCall in Cleveland where the two people were shot at 137 times, and only 47 of the bullets hit the two targets, which killed a black man and woman, but that means 90 other bullets missed and kept going. And those type of things, you didn't hear the outcry of that in Cleveland. The only one who covered it was the Final Call newspaper.
Right,
so these
right.
things are happening from coast to coast in America, and they are slanted by race against us, and we are so busy with sport and play that we are not coming together. And maybe Trayvon Martin is the glue of unification that we necessarily need to release the nuclear bomb that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said will only come through our unity. So possibly
right.
that could be the catalyst that gets us straight where our minds come together and we have these great legal minds like our brothers who are on the call and other legal minds throughout the nation, Brother Derek down in Houston, and come together and say, okay, and Brother Arif in Chicago, of course, and come together and say, man, we've got to educate not only the nation but our people to these laws and how it slants against us so that we can, as long as this demonic world stays in existence, that we can just hold on until we fight that final battle for the bringing of God's world.
Beautiful. Brothers, I've got to leave it right there, and I'm sorry we ran clear out of time.
And it's just not enough time to deal with this in the 1 hour. And I would love for you all to come back and maybe next month or something, because I want to do another panel on this subject, and I want to be able to give more time to it and the prison reform as it relates to what the Muslims want and what the Muslims believe as well. We just didn't have enough time to cover it all tonight. But I would definitely contact you brothers back in the very near future and see if we can get this panel back and get back on the air with it. And I want to thank you brothers for being out tonight, Brother Kenneth, Brother Minister Victor, and Brother Maurice.
Thank you
brothers,
brother,
for coming out.
Thank you, brother.
Yes, sir. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam. Ramadan Mubarak.
Ramadan Kareem, sir. Brother Rafi, the soldiers out there want to know who got their boots on the ground this week. Well, tonight, we want to give a special salute to some of the smaller cities, some of the cities that you don't hear from that often. Let's go down to Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's right. Soldiers in Albuquerque. And the soldiers in Albuquerque got their boots on the ground with the final call. Shout out, Albuquerque. Tulsa, Oklahoma. Yeah, soldiers in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Muhammad got the devil on the run with the final call in Tulsa. Shout out, soldiers. Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Yes, soldiers in Baton Rouge, and they got their boots on the ground with the final call. Shout out, soldiers. Keep up the good work. Little Rock, Arkansas. Huh? That's right. Soldiers in Little Rock. And Muhammad's got the devil on the run with the final call in Little Rock, Arkansas. Charleston, South Carolina. That's right. Warriors and soldiers in Charleston, South Carolina. And the soldiers got their boots on the ground. Shout out, soldiers. Seattle, Washington. That's right. The soldiers in Seattle, Washington got their boots on the ground. And Muhammad's got the devil on the run in Seattle. This is a salute to the soldiers, the fruit of Islam, who got their boots on the ground with the final call. Jacksonville, Florida. Yeah, soldiers in Jacksonville. And Muhammad's got the devil on the run in Jacksonville with the final call. Chattanooga, Tennessee. Yes, Chattanooga got their boots on the ground. Shout out, Chattanooga. Bridgeport, Connecticut. Bridgeport, Connecticut got soldiers. And the soldiers in Bridgeport got their boots on the ground as Muhammad's got the devil on the run with the final call. New Brunswick, New Jersey. That's right. Soldiers in New Brunswick. And the soldiers in New Brunswick got their boots on the ground. Shout out, New Brunswick. Phoenix, Arizona. And Muhammad's got the devil on the run in Phoenix, Arizona with the final call. But our number one. Our number one is Muhammad's Mom's 26, San Francisco, California. The soldiers in San Francisco are fast moving, fast thinking, right down to the modern times. Shout out San Francisco and keep up the good work. If you soldiers out there want to be part of an army that puts the devil in fight, if you want to be part of the fruit of Islam and join the soldiers who put their boots on the ground on behalf of the salvation of their people, pick up the phone, 773-324-6000, and ask for the office of the final call. I'm sorry. Ask for the office of the FOI and tell them that you want to join the fruit of Islam. Well, we're right on time, heading straight into the second hour of the show. Let's see who is at the Farrakhan Speaks Roundtable Talks tonight, the time and what must be done. Is our brother from Oakland, California, Student Minister Keith Muhammad, on the line? Our brother didn't get in. All right, let's go to Compton, California. Is our brother, Student Minister Robert Muhammad, on the line? Brother Rafi, did you unmute him?
Yes, sir. His mic is open, sir.
As-salamu alaykum, Brother Robert Muhammad, sir.
As-salam, sir. How are you tonight?
I'm wonderful by Allah's help. And Ramadan Mubarak to you, sir.
Ramadan Kareem, sir.
Praise be to Allah. Is our brother from San Diego, California, student minister, you, Muhammad, on the line? All right. They still got a minute to get in, Brother Rafi. Let me go ahead with Brother Robert tonight, dear brother. Let me ask you, Brother Robert, give me a talking point which you got from the minister Saturday night on the time and what must be done.
Oh, yes, sir. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank our dear leader and teacher, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, for even bringing up this beautiful subject to be teaching to us throughout the year, a subject definitely what we all need. It shed so much insight, and there's so much in it. But one of the talking points that I have is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, when he speaks about the wobble or the imperfection in the original creation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. So the minister, when he was dealing with that, his words exactly is, there was a wobble or imperfection in the original creation, but Almighty God Allah, knowing what we could not know, that what he originated yet needed some work done on it to perfect it, he set in motion a course to bring about that perfection.
Yes.
So, yes, sir. So in that point, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has taught us very well that he uses how the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught him that the earth is not round, it's oblong, but in its rotation around the sun, that sun's light strikes that earth at the equator, making it move in that oblongness in the earth. We don't even feel that wobble because that sun's light makes it revolve at such a rate, 1,037 one-third mile per hour, that whatever is on that earth is stabilized. Well, when you look at that, you can look then at our creation, since we're not perfect, but the light or the messenger or the messenger's word that is given to him by Allah stabilizes our life out the original man, but yet there's still imperfection in us. So Allah brings about the circumstances by which our imperfection would come out of us so that then it could be perfected, just as you have in the earth, dear brother. Whenever we make this great orbit, the earth makes its orbit, it goes in and out in its orbit, creating different seasonal climactic changes. With those changes, you know, if you got a severe winter, you get a severe snowstorm. If in the spring gets severe, you get a severe rainstorm. And so on. In the summer, you get severe heat. These are all changes brought about by this rotation or this dipping in and out of the sun's light. So the same it is then with the original man. When the minister was teaching Saturday, he taught us how that there was imperfection in us that caused dissatisfaction that brought about the actual creation of what we call Caucasian on our planet. That is just the outward working of what was on the inside of the original man, taken out of us so that that could be perfected, which is the original man. And he also told his brother, for one last point, that there is a way out even for that imperfection, that Caucasian, to be perfected. So I thought that right out the top off the minister's talking with us Saturday, dealing with that point, that is a very beautiful point, and it needs to be deeply looked into, and we should check that out again.
Yes, yes, absolutely, dear brother. You know, he said one of our scientists 66 trillion years ago tried to kill all on the planet that was then called Moon. And because he could not get the people to speak the same dialect out of his frustration with his inability to accomplish what he willed, he literally became so frustrated, disappointed, that he decided to destroy the planet and himself. But what he did was to prove the impossible, because in the black man, the original man, is a built-in safeguard against total self-destruction. What say you, Brother Robert?
Well, it goes again to show the great teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that this God, you know, he did say Saturday as well that, you know, the God is Alpha and he's Omega. He is the beginning and the ending. He could not be destroyed, of course. But again, if you look at starting from what he said in the beginning, you know, this dissatisfaction, these things bring about, like the season, these changes in the human being, where the human being has to deal with these changes. If there's not a mechanism that help you and I deal with these emotional changes, then we start on a path of destruction. Just like if there's no shelter from a snowstorm, if there's no shelter from a typhoon, if there's no shelter from a tsunami, then what you see is total destruction to the point of that thing that is on the earth would be destroyed. The earth is never destroyed, but that which is on it is destroyed. So we could never be destroyed. However, though, dear brother, there have been millions and billions of us that have been destroyed by this Caucasian being on the planet. And I think that we're living in this time now, in the time of our perfection, where we will never have this hiccup within us as original people, and we're going to be free from the sting of this Caucasian that's on the planet.
Beautiful, beautiful. We got a caller in queue at 310. What say you? Okay. All right then, Brother Robert. I guess you can mute them back out then, Brother Rafi. They're not ready to say anything. Well, you know, Brother Robert, again, let me go back. And I want to deal with something here.
Okay.
The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said there is a problem in us, and God would not come and manifest himself until everything in us was fully exposed or manifested to us. Then, when we are fully exposed and our defects are fully manifested, then the human being can be perfected. When we can make a perfect human being, then we can perfect the universe that Almighty God Allah created and set into motion to evolve toward perfection. What say you, sir?
I say, dear brother, to what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, it goes right back to a verse that we find in the Holy Quran. There's a verse in the Holy Quran that says that verily in the heavens and the earth are signs for those who believe and in the creation of yourselves. That's in Surah 45, I believe. Well, I know. And then there's another scripture in the Bible that says, behold, I make all things new. And then it says that I saw a new heaven and a new earth, and the former things shall be passed away. And I think what the minister is getting at when he is teaching this last Saturday is that these things that are in us, that the scripture says that Allah, God, will make all things new. He would make us into a new creation. It says that we would be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. Well, all of this is prophesied in Bible and Holy Quran, that Allah would take his chosen people and that he would purify us and make us new through a furnace of affliction, that we would come out as pure gold so that that people that we once knew, meaning ourselves, you would not see in us anymore any of the things that caused this problem to be in our lives or on our planet. All you and I would see after that point, dear brother, is what we call the hereafter, or the kingdom of Allah, or the kingdom of Islam being manifested through us on earth while we live. And I would say also that the scripture says in that day all we would hear is peace, peace.
Yes, yes, sir. You got another talking point, Brother Robert, that you want to jump on real quick before I go into another one?
Well, you know, the one talking point that I definitely caught my mind is how the minister talked about the origin of the moon and how this scientist had claimed that, you know, the earth effectively had given birth to the moon, you know, 4.5 billion years ago, and now through this controversial new theory that they have, they're proposing that a giant explosion at the rate of 40 billion atomic bombs originating from the Earth's core somehow led to the formation of the moon. And now these scientists, you know, this Wim Van Western, you know, now believe that this violent event that took place, you know, approximately 4 billion years ago could answer the hotly contested question of where our moon comes from. But look at what's stuck in my mind. The woman who wrote it, Miss Griffith, she wrote it this year, July 4th, which is the advent of the coming of Allah to us to deal with what we talked about in the last point, making all things new. July 4th, the time that Allah made himself known to get a people and then to change that people and make that people new. But look at what the Caucasian is doing. He is what we call mankind. He calls himself mankind. A kind of a man that he's still trying to explore the origins of a place that he is new to, only 6,000 years old. So the minister said, no, you have it all wrong. From the teaching, this whole place was called Moon. That there was an explosion, but it was not 4 billion years ago. It was 66 trillion years ago. Mm-hmm. And that part that was blew off turned over and over and turned the water onto this part that we call Earth. And now this is why this part is three quarters water, one quarter land. But I find it very interesting, dear brother, that now they're trying to slowly creep up on the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, which they do have. They're still yet reluctant to go all the way with him. But with everything that he does, the Caucasian, he does what he does in stages before he comes out with the total truth. So I thought that was very interesting.
Yes, sir. Is our brother, student minister Keith Muhammad, on the line from Oakland, California?
Yes, sir, dear brother. Salaam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir, and Ramadan Mubarak.
Ramadan Kareem.
It's good to have you back on, sir.
Oh, I'm honored to be on with the family.
Yes, sir. Give us a talking point, brother minister, from the time and what must be done, part 28. So powerful.
Well, as you stated, brothers, everything that our beloved minister has done in these 28 weeks of the time and what must be done is, in fact, powerful. And I think I heard student minister Arif mention on Sunday some of the beauty that went into the preparation of this particular message. And if we watch our minister in delivering these messages, we're looking at a man that is absolutely guided by God. For in any sentence that he shared or any passage that he pointed out or any chapter that he pointed us to, there is so much in any given part of these messages. When we begin to crack them open, we actually unleash the power that comes from cracking an atom. So as we are looking at many of the words that he shared, I was just reading through some of the recommended reading he gave with the message. And he shared that we should read pages 31 and 32 of Message to the Black Man. And there it shares of our greatness. I heard my brother speaking of the moon just a moment ago. And I'm going to read just a few words from Message to the Black Man as shared by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad of our brother Shabazz, who went 50,000 years ago into East Asia, now known as Africa. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad writes, "So, being the first and smartest scientist on the deportation of our moon and the one who suffered most of all, Allah God has decided to place us on top with a thorough knowledge of self and his guidance. We are the mighty, the wise, the best, but do not know it. Being without the knowledge, we disgrace ourselves, subjecting ourselves to suffering and shame. We could not get the knowledge of self until the coming of Allah. To know thyself is to know all men. As from us came all, and to us all will return." I'm very grateful that our beloved minister is so studiously pointing out for us what we should study and grow to know. I've heard him say that in his early ministry that he studied 9 and 10 hours a day, hardly able to hold on to a job because he devoted so much of his time to the study of the wisdom of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And in that time, though he suffered economically, he lived in very impoverished conditions. And if we read Closing the Gap again, he'll share with us the trial of poverty that he and his family has endured. But in order to get to the wisdom, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave to him, he had to make the great sacrifice, not unlike the kind of sacrifices that we all must make. In order to follow the footsteps of this servant of God, it requires complete sacrifice. And so I'm inspired by our minister's message. And as an opening note, that's what stood out for me, brother, the many references he gave. And if we follow them in our study, they'll begin to unlock in our minds more of what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad intended for us. But, of course, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was given such a wonderful helper in the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who the messenger could entrust him by saying, "Brother, don't say it like I said it 30 years ago or 40 years ago. I want you to teach the meaning of what I say." So we are abundantly blessed to get these meanings in the time and what must be done.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this question, because he went into the two stars, the red and blue that can be seen in the southeastern skies. And, you know, of course, we know that once we see these stars, next time we see them will be 50,000 years from now. But he said these two stars mean the removal of a world that doesn't correspond with the original world. What say you, Brother Minister?
Well, praise be to Allah. After 50,000 years of our sojourn, after finding our way through East Asia or Africa and into the Americas, you now find that we are a people that are 100% dissatisfied. In the time and what must be done, he shared with us that the fact that Yaqub, who is the scientist responsible for the making of the Caucasian, that he was born out of a time period of 30% dissatisfaction. He said that man would bring a significant change. Well, that man has, and that man did, in fact, do that. But at the end of 50,000 years of our sojourn, the dissatisfaction would be so great that it's far greater than 30%, it's far greater than 50%, it's far greater than 70%, but we're living in a time of 100% dissatisfaction. And 100% dissatisfaction brings about a 100% change or a universal change. I believe I was listening to my brother Robert from Compton just a moment ago, and I don't know that he was in the city at the time, but the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has taken great time in Southern California talking to those that are so-called gangs, our street organizations, and while there, he shared with them that same wisdom of the blue and the red star. And that in that hour, while our people have been divided in that city over the colors of blue and the colors of red, when these men and women who have held on to these colors would unite and organize themselves, they literally are able to unleash a power with the guidance of Allah and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to bring about a complete and full and universal change. So I think, brother, that we are blessed that our minister have taken so much time, especially there in Southern California, with those who have become notoriously known all over the earth for their disunity. But out of that disunity is dissatisfaction. And that dissatisfaction is going to bring us back into unity again, because quite frankly, we can't be destroyed. We will be here forever. So why don't we be here together?
All praise is due to Allah. Brother Robert, sir.
Yes, sir.
The minister was talking about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he said, whenever it is time for a certain part of the book to come into fruition, one of the 12 major scientists would reveal what is called scripture or part of the writings to a prophet or a messenger who would fulfill that part that concerns him and the people to whom he would be sent. What say you, sir?
Well, all praise is due to Allah. You know, dear brother, whenever you look at how Allah, God, deals with his servants, let's look at the servant in our time, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and his great helper, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Allah, knowing that he is trying to get after something, in this particular case, the people in the hells of North America, then Allah finds that person that has the right ingredients to carry out that mission, that message and that mission. So that person has to have the type of love for people that nobody could love. That person has to have the type of understanding for people that nobody could understand. That person also has to have an undying and an unfailing love to complete that mission through any circumstance or through anything that would come in their way, even going through or to death's door. So you find those qualities in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad found those qualities in the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Now, whenever Allah wants to reveal to the people that message that would wake that people up, and in our case, perfect that people, well, first he looks for the person that has the perfect love for him. And then if that person has the perfect love for him, then he would definitely have the perfect love for his people. So then him revealing through that person the script, well, then we know that a script in most cases is a part of a greater play or the play. And then those persons, whoever part it is, they have to get that particular script so that they can play their part. But the Honorable Elijah Muhammad plays the part of the last one and the best one that has come to do the work that no other prophet, messenger, or warner could do. He comes in the volumes of the book. So then that means that all previous scripts and all other parts that was played by Moses and Jesus and Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, these parts now are given in a package total to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and then some, because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is the one that goes deeper into the meaning of what was revealed to them, so that now we not only have the book and the Torah, we have the wisdom also, and we have the revelation of the understanding of all of this, so that now we could be guided on the right path, as the opening prayer says in that book, that great book, the Holy Quran. So as I see it, when we look at that man, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and his servant among us, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, what is being revealed and giving to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is just so awesome. And if I may add this before I give up this point, dear Brother Keith, my dear brother, no, I was not here when the minister was coming into Southern California at that time. I hadn't made it out here then. But, dear brother, I was in San Diego, I believe it was last year, when the minister received divine revelation while he was speaking at that church. And he said that Satan was a gift of Allah God to us.
That's right.
For our perfection. Well, then, if you look at script being revealed to the man of God while he is talking, and then when he said that one of the brothers that was on the rostrum with him, he said, man, I've never heard it like that before. And he said, because I've never taught it like that before. It was given to me. But afterwards, we had the distinct pleasure of sitting with the minister at the table downstairs in that little restaurant. And he told us this, dear brother. He said, what we witnessed that day, no other people witnessed. He said, for we witnessed Allah giving to his servant revelation right there on the spot that had not been done like that before. So, again, that man, and he also told us this, that we could receive God's instruction ourselves if our hearts were right. And if we totally submitted
to Allah, God, he would speak through us as well. So the man has to be perfected in his love, and I believe that is how and why God gives to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan the double portion of the spirit, and what he gave to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad face-to-face, he is now giving it to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in his whole spirit.
Praise be to Allah. Absolutely. Brother Minister Keith, what say you, sir? Another talking point from the time and what must be done?
Well, there's so much, certainly, for us to consider. In fact, what my brother just shared, the heart of the Honorable Minister and the heart of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad is such that we should see that these are men that were born to do what they do. So when we look at how the minister shared it in the time, he talked about Yaqub, a man being born of a determined idea. One year, we had a student here in our city who was doing very well in high school, and he was considering a college career or going out and pushing the program and doing something for himself. And our brother Jibril Muhammad, great friend and helper of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, came into the city, heard what the concern was, and he told me to tell that brother that he who has a better education will find a better place for himself in the hereafter. And then the minister would go on to share that when you are doing what you are born to do, that's more than likely what you love to do, and that those are the subject matters that you should study. So we are each born with a determined idea. Certainly, Minister Farrakhan is born a man with a determined idea, which is why every time he stands before us and teaches, it doesn't matter what his health condition is, it doesn't matter the level of fatigue he may suffer, it doesn't matter the controversy that may surround him, but God uses him each and every time. I've never seen the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan miss in the way of teaching us. He's never left us confused. He's never walked away from us, leaving us unsatisfied with the meal that we just received. And as it is for we who love and know and are striving to follow him, we find the same reality among those that never heard from him before, which says to us that God made him to communicate the message of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to our people. He's a man born of a determined idea. And when he does that which satisfies what he was born to do, it gives him life as he's giving us life. And so it stands out for me that Yaqub is this man born of a determined idea, and he's able to accomplish what he accomplished by what the minister called the force of that determination. And if we just look at the minister's achievements in rebuilding the nation, we are looking at the force of determination born out of love of Allah and his messenger. The greatest miracle of rebuilding a nation from nothing destroyed by the U.S. government. The great miracles that we've watched him achieve over these last years since 1977. These are miracles in our midst. Of course, the Million Man March, the Stop the Killing Tour, the Men Only Meetings, the World Friendship Tours. We've witnessed miracle after miracle. And by the way, in many of these travels, his health was failing him, and he could have, by all doctors' accounts, died in the field. But again, the force of his determination as he does that which he was born to do. So evidently, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, like his teacher, is a man born of a determined idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Brother Minister Robert, do you have another talking point, sir, would you like to give us?
I would just like to, if I could, give, I won't say add to Brother Keith because he said it so beautifully and so eloquently, but he did make me think about the point that he made that I would just like to add to what he said, that also there is no time that we have read in the histories of the prophets and messengers
where we ever get to be as close and as intimate with the one that God raises for our deliverance. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan adds to his duty, and I might add, would add to his ability to receive from Allah God that blessed gift that God gives him, so that he never misses, Brother Keith, or never leaves us feeling empty with the meal that he gives us. Is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is such a truthful man, even of his own development. He gives us a roadmap and an understanding of how we can evolve from man going up into God himself. Because the minister has always taught us that when his teacher had left him, he had become so disheartened by the teacher leaving and things that came in his life that he literally, by God's permission, had to be raised back up. But that took a process. And as Brother Keith knows, and I know as well, whenever the minister talks with us, his laborers, he always tries to get us to understand the process that he had to go through to get back up into God. It's not a process that's difficult, but it's a process that takes truthful and honest reflection on the inside, and then that type of submission that will allow God to come in to give to us what is needed that he gave to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for our resurrection. So when I look at the broadcast this week, as I look at them all, the minister, even in his beauty, he could have continued down the line of the destruction of those that are on the planet that Allah writes would be destroyed, but he talked about their possibly escaping their destruction if they would submit to be born again. So the one that tweeted him and said that, you know, the minister made a brazen comment, and this time he went too far. He threw them all under the bus. The minister reminded him of the love that Allah has for us as a people and the mercy that he has for them if they would submit by giving them a way out to be born again of the spirit that Islam gives when you join in and submit to it. And then the water is, you cannot get the water or the drink from any other source today. You must get that water or that drink from God's man on the planet, his servant, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Praise be to Allah. Well, Minister Keith, let me ask you this question here this way. The minister said Saturday, speaking of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he said that the wisdom of Master Farad Muhammad is to bring a end to these signs to show something to come afterwards. He said, this man's wisdom, there is no wisdom to come after this that will be able to erase this wisdom, because this wisdom is brought to you from the root of wisdom, from the originator of the universe. What say you, Brother Minister?
Well, all praises belongs to Allah for coming to us in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, knowing that in order to raise us up from the condition that we've been left in, requires that kind of wisdom. Caucasian people are not the only ones that have a need of being born again. And so the very door that Nicodemus mentioned for them is the door that also is available to us, in fact, was brought and opened for us first. So we're very grateful that Almighty God Allah came and raised the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and made him the door. And we're very grateful that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, with his God, found Minister Louis Farrakhan and gave him the key, that we might together find our way through that door to that eternal wisdom that the scriptures promise would come. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said to us recently, I believe in this series, that the Bible and the Holy Quran, they don't take us into the hereafter, but they take us up to the hereafter. But this one who raised the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the first begotten of the dead, and then raised again the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the first begotten of them that slept, has that knowledge, that wisdom, and that understanding that he is bringing an eternal wisdom never to go away. So we are very thankful to be in this divine position.
All praise is due to Allah. Brother Minister Robert, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan also said, he said, the original black nation would give birth to one whose wisdom and knowledge and power would be infinite, one whom the world would recognize as being the greatest and mightiest God since the creation of the universe, and he would destroy Yaqub's world and restore the original nation into power to rule forever. What say you, sir?
Well, dear brother, all praise is due to Allah for that, man, great amount of wisdom and teaching. Well, the man that he gave birth to is the man that my dear brother, Brother Keith, student minister Keith, was just talking about, Master Farad Muhammad. Mm-hmm. You know, the scriptures prophesied that, one, he would come. You know, but what made and what makes him to be known for who he is that he does what some consider the impossible. See, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has taught us over and over again that we were stylized as dead people. So then the greatest thing is, how do you raise the dead to life? See, once you can raise the dead for life to life, that is an impossibility. So if you have a people that are dead to the knowledge of themselves, dead to the knowledge of God, dead to the knowledge of any unity we can have, dead to the knowledge of their names, their origin, and then you come and raise that people up to life again, but then you have to know that that is the power of the one that was given birth to and brought about the change, that has so much power and wisdom that you could not even see past his wisdom. The writers couldn't even see past this man. They had to stop writing when they saw him, his light shine that bright. Now, those that put us to sleep and those that murdered the original man's spirit, murdered his mind, so he thought, and murdered his origin, so he thought, and murdered his history, so he thought, they have to go through a process of deep, deep repentance. And be willing, like the minister said when he talked about the great scene in the Godfather's movie, are you willing to renounce Satan and all of his works? And if you're willing to renounce him, then you could be born again into something that you are different from now, different from one who has the Cronus complex, different from one who thinks that he has the entitlement to rule, different from this mad behavior that you have sexually. You can be born again. But to those that went through this type of trial, these people, the scripture says, are stylized as the dead. So then it showed the part where Jesus had to raise Lazarus from the dead. He first thought Lazarus was sleeping, but when he really checked out the scene, it says, to show the scripture, Jesus wept because he knew that Lazarus was dead. But he prayed to Allah and he called Lazarus forth three times, and Lazarus came out, but he came out with a napkin on his eyes and his face, and he came out with his hands bound. So then the work of this great master Farad Muhammad then is not only to raise us from death to life, but is to continue the process through his servant, that we might go all the way, not up to the door, as Brother Chief said, with these two great books of light, but we can go right into the hereafter and enjoy the peace and blessings of Allah forever without cessation.
All praise is due to Allah. Brother Minister Keith, let me ask the question here, sir. This is something here that I'm just now seeing, and maybe this question could go to both of you because I really don't know the answer to this, but I see something in what the minister said Saturday when he talked about when these scientists saw up to the present 50,000-year cycle, the scientists couldn't see beyond it. That great light that they saw interfered with their sight, and so they could not write the last 10,000 years of this cycle of the history that would be necessary to fulfill the present cycle of history that we are in. Do you think maybe this has something to do with the reason why the great Moxie chose the name Farad to leave us with?
Well, of course, the name Farad means obligatory.
Mm-hmm.
And it being a part of our morning prayer service and all of our day's prayers include the Farad or the obligatory part of our prayer. So as we are looking at this 15,000th year into the cycle, where a light that comes, it's so bright that the scientists could not see beyond it. Well, while we may not be able to see beyond it, if we open up our heart and our eyes, we can see him. And if we submit to him and him alone, then and only then can we find our way walking toward the hereafter. So when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad or the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, pardon me, taught us of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that he is the door. Well, if we can't see Master Farad Muhammad, we can't see the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And if we can't see the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we cannot see the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. For to see one is to see all, and to see all is to see one. And so, brother, I would say simply that his light came so bright, they couldn't see what he would bring in its fullness. But what he has brought is the wisdom that's needed for the fullness of time.
Absolutely. Brother, Minister Robert, what say you, sir?
I say that Brother Keith said that so beautifully, man. You got me over here just smiling away, sir.
Yes, sir. Well,
sir,
go right ahead, sir.
I can only just concur to what the brother said. That was very beautiful, Brother Keith.
Praise be to Allah.